Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspective.
All right, Madigan. Well, we just spent the last 10 minutes or so talking about your great adventure this week with your pupper. So if our listeners don't know, Madigan did share to our stories a thing.
I sure did.
Your puppy, Penny, I mean, she's not really a puppy anymore, but she still feels like a puppy to me.
She had quite the
adventure yesterday.
She sure did. She scared me and Max to death. It was the worst thing. It was the worst 5.5 hours of my entire life. Our little girl slipped out of her collar, got spooked, and ran down a busy street. I have no idea how she crossed some of those busy intersections without getting hit or having any other animal come up to her or anything.
Or any other person, because if I see a dog running around in the street, especially like without a collar or anything, like, yeah, I'm like, Anthony, pull over. Like, we got to go get this dog. You know what I mean?
I've done the same thing. I wonder if maybe she was too, like, scared or anything to go near people. But we think that she was probably running around for about 2.5 hours or so, because someone on Nextdoor, thankfully, posted a picture of her laying in a stairwell. We think that because she really, really hurt her paws. She got a couple of her dew claws removed, and the pads of her feet are like mangled. It was horrible. They were so bloody. And she just found this stairwell, a shady, cool spot, and laid there for like 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I mean, and I was telling you, yesterday was so hot. Anthony and I drove down to walk the streets to look for her. And I was, we were walking for a little while, and I was like, oh my God, it is so hot out here. Like, we were sweating. Yeah. So I'm glad that
and
she found
some shade.
And I
had the stomach flu.
Yeah.
I still had the stomach flu when I was looking. Thankfully, the last time I went out, I think I was done puking, but I was still like so nauseous. I hadn't eaten. I mean, I was empty and I hadn't eaten since like the dinner the night before. So I was fully going on adrenaline. I was hot and felt like I was going to pass out. But yeah, I'm so thankful that she's home. She's doing okay. She's in a lot of pain. She's very cute because she's got like anti-anxiety meds and her pain meds. So she gets kind of glassy-eyed and cuddly.
And she's all bandaged, all four of her paws. Yeah.
Yeah, she can't really walk on the hardwood floor very well. She slips and can't really get a grip. She wanted to lay on the ground last night, and then Max and I went and had dinner in the next room, and she started crying because she couldn't get up. So we had to, like, pick her up and get her back on the couch. She couldn't get her grip on the hardwood floor to stand.
I just want to say, you know, I said it to you earlier. I hope this is a lesson to Penny Lane not to run away. You got her pretty good at home. It's a pretty cushy, comfortable life with people who love you. Don't run away.
I know. And Keegan reminded me that I think it was, like, a week ago that I was like, my dog doesn't run away, because she literally, every time she's gotten loose from us, she'll, like, maybe run in circles around us, but then she doesn't leave our
side. It was literally the last time we recorded, last week.
I know.
You were like, Dorothy will run off, but Penny never runs off. And then this week you were like, oh no, Penny ran off.
I couldn't believe it. I think she got spooked. There was, we've got these five little dogs that live upstairs. They were outside. So I think that there was enough commotion going on that she just fled. Yeah. And wasn't even thinking about it, and then probably didn't know where she was. But I mean, Max was out looking for the first half of the day, and I just pulled a couch cushion onto the floor, and I opened my door, so I just had the screen door. And I just laid there with Dorothy, hoping that she would, like,
come home,
pop up into the door. And I did all the online stuff while Max was running around. Our friend Kate made posters that we luckily never had to make.
Or use,
so Yeah, exactly. She never even had to make them. She sent me the file and was like, is this good? And I was like, we don't need it anymore.
We thought about that after we left the house, because we have a printer now at home. And I'm like, we could have printed things ourselves, because we were asking people as we were walking around, like, have you seen a dog? Like, this is just, and everybody would be like, no, but I'll keep my eyes open. And I'm like, okay, thank you. But also, like, you don't have our contact information. So
exactly. Yeah. It makes it tough, but, yeah, thankfully we never needed it. Thank you to Cindy, who found her and kept an eye on her and was so sweet. She had a little dog of her own, so Penny was safe with a dog lover. And yeah, we're so emotional still. And I'm exhausted. I'm sure Max is exhausted too.
I bet.
I don't know how parents of missing human children do it, how they go on. I really don't, because it was terrifying, absolutely terrifying yesterday. So thank you to everybody who reposted and reached out to me. I had a lot of listeners that messaged me and said very sweet things. So I really, really appreciate you guys caring so much and understanding how, you know, our furry babies really are our babies.
Yeah,
you know?
They are. And it is really hard. Speaking of thank yous, I want to give a thank you to everybody. I finished putting the Ipsy bags hygiene kits together this weekend. And I have 145 completed bags. I have a giant box. We bought a big box from Box City. I have a giant box full of bags, and I actually have some that I didn't use. So I'm keeping those. I'm going to do this again next year. I have those bags, and then I have 15 bags of pads that are unopened that I didn't even put into bags that I'm just going to donate the unopened bags as well. Perfect. Those will probably go to a shelter for our unhoused community here in Los Angeles. So I know that there were a lot of listeners who reached out. A lot of people sent things. And I just want to give a really big thank you, because that is going to go to an outreach this week. So thank you all so much. And look out for that next year, because I think I'm just going to do this once a year. Keep it going. Maybe I'll do it in a different city or a different, you know, for a different city or for a different state.
Well, and thank you for doing it. Like, I think it's such, I've thought about that for so many years and been like, I want to do that. And I never did anything about it. So the fact that you followed through with it and you got 145 bags filled with things, I think is amazing. So thank you for doing that.
Really restores my faith in people, because the amount of people who wanted to come out, who bought things, spent their hard-earned money on somebody else to make someone's experience on this planet just a little bit easier, made me feel so much better, because I know that you and I, we're about to talk about the news. You and I spend a lot of time reading the news, and it can get really easy to start thinking that, you know, everybody sucks, and that's not the case. Yeah, so
it isn't. Yeah, and I mean, hey, that was probably the biggest thing I learned yesterday too, is just the sense of community in the world and the kindness of strangers going so far. So, man, we are feeling all the love.
Feeling good.
Well, we're about to not feel so good, because there was, we've got some pretty sad stuff to discuss this week. I'm assuming that you probably have notes on this as well.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, we had a few listeners reach out saying that they really, really wanted us to cover this. So we are going to do our best to discuss this. I don't have all of the information on everything. It seems like there's a lot of things that are still unfolding. There's a lot of historical stuff that I learned that I don't know if I'm going to be able to get fully into right now, but there were 215 children, the remains of children, found at a former boarding school in Canada this week. All of these children were Indigenous children.
Residential school.
And yes. Mm-hmm. And so I am going to try to pronounce this the best that I can. I tried to write it out phonetically in the best way possible, so I'm sorry if I butcher it, but it was the Tikamloops Sekopen First Nation announced last week that they had found the remains of 215 children, some as young as 3 years old, buried at the site of Kamloops Indian Residential School, once Canada's largest boarding schools to separate children from their families and culture. So between 1831 and 1996, Canada's residential school system forcibly separated children from their families and subjected them to horrendous abuse, rape, and malnutrition in boarding homes, according to the group tasked to investigate this, the Truth and Reconciliation Committee.
Yeah, and this kind of thing happened in the United States as well. I know that the residential school system in Canada is specific and unique to Canada. But the same kind of thing, the same kind of reprogramming, for lack of a better word, that tried to do, this cultural
and they're calling
destruction.
They were calling it cultural genocide.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that they were trying to remove the Indigenous culture from their land. So Chief Roseanne Casimir of the nation said on Friday that ground-penetrating radar had discovered the remains near the site of Kamloops Indian Residential School, which operated from 1890 until the 1970s. They had been told previously that there were only 51 deaths by that same, that first group that I mentioned called, where is it? Truth and Reconciliation Committee originally said that there were 51 deaths, but the First Nation was sure that there were more, and they've actually spent the last 20 years trying to find them, and it was just recently that the government granted them the money to pay for the ground-penetrating radar. Most of these schools were operated by churches, and then a lot of times later on purchased by the federal government.
Yeah, I mean, I stand by everything we literally just said about human kindness, and that I think that there is more of it than we sometimes think that there is, but it is still ever present how horrible people are capable of being to each other, and specifically, you know, people are capable of being to people who are other than them, and then for it to happen to children is just so... It just seems unfathomable to people like you and I that this could happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's this sad idea that, you know, trying to wipe away the culture of these children in order for the next generation not to be able to carry on those traditions is really, it's evil. It's evil what they're doing.
Right. I mean, what they're doing is evil. And then on top of what they're doing, which is bad enough, they then don't even provide them with the safety and security that they would have gotten had they stayed home with their parents, or likely would have gotten, been given, and kindness, you know.
Because they were probably seen as less human. You know, it's the same as, you know, when we talk about concentration camps and all these other things. That if you're seen as different, you're seen as less human, and it would make it easier for people to be cruel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people in the community were so confused. There's someone named Geraldine Bob, who was a former student, told the commission that the staff members would just start beating you and lose control and hurl you against the wall, throw you on the floor, kick you, punch you. And other children who would see their friends just disappearing would say one day your friend would be gone and you had no idea if they would be back or not. In 2015, the Archbishop issued a letter repeating the Archdiocese's apology for the role the church played in the federal government's residential school policy. Yeah, it was the order that was running that particular school was an order called the Oblates of Mary Immaculate.
So is this a Catholic?
This is a Catholic ordinance, yeah. And they ran the school until 1969 when the federal government took it over. But then the school actually closed in 1970, and they say that it's now a memorial. So updates on what's happening right now with the excavation and everything, they're saying it's going to take a long time to excavate and identify and return the remains of these children to their families for a proper burial, but that is the incentive right now to take their time and get to the bottom of this. In response to the news, gestures of solidarity showed up across Canada, with one of the most documented being the leaving of empty shoes in front of legislatures, churches, and public buildings, which I'm sure, or I hope, that you've seen images of this on social media and such this week. It's incredibly heartbreaking, incredibly moving. And again, I'm glad that people are paying the respect that is needed to these children who lost their lives. And Prime Minister Justin Trudeau had flags on federal buildings lowered to half-mast, as have many other Canadian leaders.
You know, it's just, I get really upset because how many lives have we lost to white supremacy, and how many lives have we lost to religion? Like, seriously, at this point,
too many.
It's upsetting to me, especially as someone who grew up as a religious person, and I've seen a lot of kindness in people from the church, and I'm not here to disparage anybody who finds comfort or solace in religion. I get it. I do get it. But at the same time, speaking specifically because this is an instance of abuse by the Catholic Church, how many of these are we going to have to listen to? How many cases of these egregious acts that are done or sanctioned by church officials that have had devastating consequences. Oftentimes, two children, are we going to have to suffer? Like, you know, yeah. It's just, and at this point, those apologies, they just seem so empty. Like, they just seem so hollow and meaningless because it doesn't really bring back. I wouldn't feel okay if that was a family member of mine and I'm sorry. Right. It's like, thank you for finally recognizing that this happened on like a global scale. I think that's
the thing, is that there has to be recognition. It would be worse if they didn't say anything at all. You know, I think that I understand where you have to come forward and apologize, even if you weren't around when it happened, but that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody else has to accept that apology. But I do think it's important that they said something and recognized that it's bad.
I mean,
although it feels hollow, although they may not even mean it, I would rather have them face what they've done and admit it. You know, I think about with the quote unquote comfort women that we discussed, how there is just such a lack of acknowledgement in the pain that they've caused.
Sure.
If I will at least say that I'm glad that something was said. But more than anything, I know that these atrocities in some way, shape, or form still happen in the Catholic Church. And I know they still happen in so many other parts of our country and in our world, in other organizations and other groups. And I want to know what we can do to prevent this from happening. What can we do to protect the children?
I don't think, speaking from this perspective of religion, you know, specifically talking about the Catholic Church, I don't think anything will change within the Catholic Church. No, because
it should have already. It should have.
Because the church is invested in covering it up. I think that's why the apology rings very hollow to me.
Exactly.
It's the same thing that I feel whenever I hear about law enforcement agencies kind of doing similar stuff. It's like when you're caught, then you have somebody release a statement saying that you're sorry that this happened and you take responsibility or whatever. But it's like, no, you don't. Because what you do is if you are in the church, you actively work to make sure that when things like this happen, when there are priests who are molesting boys, that they don't just get or girls or children or anybody, that they don't just get moved from around, church to church, because it's in the best interest of your organization to cover it up and deny justice for as long as possible until you get caught with something. Like, thank you for apologizing, but at the same time, if it's the same way I feel about police, if there is not structural change coming from the top that changes what's happening on the way down, then what does it matter? Because
this
specific thing isn't happening anymore, right? Residential schools have been shut down. However, things continue to happen all the time.
Yeah.
And like, I need to see that you are actively working or doing your part if you are in the church to ensure that this kind of thing does not happen again and that you're holding people accountable. You know, that's what's most important. These people need to be held accountable, because this is it's despicable. It's so sad.
215 children.
Yeah.
It's 215 too many. It is an absolute catastrophe.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I hope that I covered it well enough. I've had some Canadian listeners reach out to me where I'm sure they have much more of an understanding of all of this than I do, but I've really been trying to do my best to keep an eye on that this week, and both of our hearts go out to the Indigenous communities.
Absolutely, and I will say right now that it will go on our list to do an episode about residential schools, because there is so much to be discussed there.
Yes.
You know, it's a deep issue. We would love to talk about it more thoroughly in the future, for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, what do you have for us today, Keegan?
Well, mine is not as sad as that.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to slowly improve through the episode.
Right. So I wanted to talk about the fact that Biden announced the National Month of Action, basically talking about additional steps that his administration wants to take to try and get us to 70% of adults who have at least one COVID-19 shot by the 4th of July. So last Wednesday, he made an announcement. He said it's going to take everyone, the federal government, the state government, local, tribal, and territorial governments, private sector, and most importantly, the American people. I assume these are all American people, but all right. to get all this 70% mark so we can declare our independence from COVID-19 and free ourselves from the grip it has held over us, our lives, for the better part of a year. I hate...
Great wording, Mr. President. Great wording.
I kind of hate it. Like, I rolled my eyes about that so much because he's like, we're going to have this done by the 4th of July and declare our independence from COVID. And I'm like, okay, listen, who
wrote... Give me a fucking break.
Which one of your speech writers wrote that for you? Joe. Okay. He went on to say that getting vaccinated is not a partisan act. Thank you so much, Joe Biden, because you're right, it is not.
And Joe Biden.
The month of action includes a partnership. This I thought was funny and I thought you might appreciate. A partnership with Anheuser-Busch that could mean free alcohol for every American 21 years of age or older.
Yeah!
Anheuser-Busch, drink. Which is a national brewer. It produces Budweiser. It announced Wednesday it was going to give away free alcohol if the nation reaches Biden's goal to have 70% of U.S. adults receive at least one dose by July 4th.
All right, everyone.
I know. Look, you know what you got to do. And I thought about this and I was like, God, that's might be... It's kind of touchy for people maybe struggling with alcohol addiction.
Right, right, right.
But they did say that they will buy America's next round of beer, seltzer, non-alcoholic beverage, or other Anheuser-Busch product to those who are 21 and up who upload a picture of themselves at their favorite bar or restaurant. That's how you enter to win.
But how will they know that you're vaccinated?
I don't think that they will. I think that the incentive is they are only going to offer this if we reach the 70.
Oh, if you're inside a bar,
right,
then you have to be... I understand. Well, that's a really good point.
I mean, well, but bars aren't checking your vaccination papers either. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
But I think it's more of the push here is to make sure that we reach herd immunity, right? And we have not reached herd immunity as of yet. So
I want to... Can I interject really quick? Because you actually told me something about... Yes. Was it your family member or Anthony's family member?
Anthony's that uncle. Wanted,
tell that story because I love it so much.
Okay, so I was going to talk about this not last week, but the week before, I think, because Ohio, who I will talk about in just a moment, Ohio started its Vax-a-Million campaign, which was basically that they are going to, I think it's five, they're going to give away $5 million to five lucky winners if you... And to be eligible, you have to be vaccinated, right?
Right.
So Anthony went home, and God bless him. I'm not going to call him out by name. He knows who he is. But Anthony went home to visit his family, and his uncle, who is a 60-year-old man, they were out at a restaurant, and he said, oh, I'm about to join you. I have my vaccination appointment next week. So he hadn't been vaccinated, by the way, and he's at this restaurant.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right. And they were like, why didn't you, like, you're 60, like, you've been eligible to get the vaccine for like a long time.
Yeah, like, why haven't you done it?
And he said he didn't do it because he wasn't going to be vaccinated until this Vax-a-Million thing happened. And he wanted to be eligible to win $1 million. So he got vaccinated. And it, listen, I understand that at the end of the day...
I mean, that's a lot of money.
And you know who won, actually? Because they won, I think, last week. It was a 22-year-old girl who was on her way to purchase a used car. She's the one who won the first million. So
love it.
Good for her. But so, yeah, his uncle didn't want to do it until this incentive program started. And it... I understand that it is net positive for more people to get vaccinated. We need to reach herd immunity. I understand that's why these incentive programs are coming about. And at the end of the day, it's a positive thing. However, it made me so mad because I was just like, look, if you don't, clearly you don't have some kind of deep reason for moral reason for not being vaccinated.
So, it's just about the money.
So why didn't you do it before? Like, if there was no real reason, if you didn't object to it on some kind of like deeply moral ground, then why wouldn't you have just done it because it was the right thing? Why did it have to be a thing?
Well, you said that he was waiting for this million thing, but I'm wondering if...
Well, he didn't know.
I mean, how did he know? I mean, that's the thing. It's like, he couldn't have been waiting for that if that wasn't a thing all along.
Right, right.
Yeah, but if you're not morally objecting to it, why aren't you doing it? I completely agree.
He just wouldn't have gotten vaccinated is the thing. He just wouldn't have gotten vaccinated. He only got vaccinated because there was an incentive for him to get vaccinated, which almost makes me more angry than the people who really do, like, true anti-vaxxers who are like,
yeah,
because at least they have some kind of integrity. I know that that's a twisted way of thinking about it, because at the end of the day,
totally.
We want everyone to get vaccinated. That's the goal. And we,
but it's that infuriating thing where it's like, well, if you're not against it, then why the then fuck just do, not it do it?
Because it's the right thing for everyone, for you to do it, and there shouldn't have to be anything in it for you. And it just makes me mad. But anyway, whatever. He got vaccinated. It's all good. There are also new vaccination incentives that Biden has announced, including four of the nation's largest child care providers will be offering free child care from now until July 4th for Americans who have gotten the COVID-19 vaccine.
That's huge.
It's huge, yes. So he said KinderCare and Learning Care Group locations across the nation will offer free drop-in care to support Americans getting vaccinated, and more than 500 YMCAs will offer drop-in care during vaccination appointments. Bright Horizons will also provide free child care to support more than 10 million workers employed at participating organizations.
Wow. Also, I know that Uber is doing a free ride for people who can't get to the vaccine sites themselves, which I think is really great.
There's all kinds of stuff. Like, I think in New York, Shake Shack is offering something. Krispy Kreme is offering something. And starting next week, thousands of pharmacies, including Albertsons, CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens, will stay open late every Friday in June in order to allow Americans to get vaccinated. Now.
Awesome.
So this all sounds pretty good.
Right.
Conservatives and anti-vaxxers are pissed about incentives. About the incentives. Like, they're mad about the incentives.
Yeah, because they don't want the people that are maybe on the fence or the people that will give into an incentive to give into it. They want more people on their side. So if there's more incentive, they're worried they're going to lose their numbers, you know?
But they are taking some pretty drastic steps. So Republicans in the general... Republicans in the state general assembly in Ohio are pushing sweeping legislation to weaken Ohio's vaccination laws. This is a response to Mike DeWine, who's the governor of Ohio, his Vax-a-Million plan. So for, and this is for all vaccines, not just for COVID-19. So on May 26th, anti-vaccination activists crammed into the House Health Committee hearing room to testify in support of House Bill 248. The legislation would ban vaccine requirements on customers, employees, or students from businesses, hospitals, nursing homes, K-12 schools, colleges, daycares, and others. It would also prevent governments, insurers, or businesses from offering incentives to people to get vaccinated or even requesting that people get vaccinated. So you would not even be able to say you need to be vaccinated to do anything. You wouldn't be able to bring it up at all. And we're not just talking about COVID-19. We're talking about any vaccination.
Any vaccine.
Right. So under the bill, a small business owned by someone who is asthmatic or a cancer survivor, both of whom are at higher risk of serious COVID-19 complications, would have no legal right to require or even request that employees or customers who come inside be vaccinated. So if you are high risk, you have no legal right to tell somebody that they can't come into your business.
Yeah.
Which is madness.
That is madness, because they're, from what I understand, it's kind of been like, you know, once the mask mandate or whatever is lifted, it's still up to individual stores and businesses to say whether or not they want you to wear masks or
not. Right. I mean, and so much about what conservatives have been upset about with these statewide mandates, right, with social distancing mandates and small businesses being closed down, is that it infringes upon the right of the business owner to make decisions, like having that you have to have mask mandates inside and things like that. And like, this really infringes upon the right of a business owner.
How ironic.
Right. And they would be making this decision in the interest of their own health. You know what I mean? And you're saying they're not even allowed to request it. I highly doubt that this will pass, but it is just kind of, it was wild to me the lengths that someone would go to try and stop other people from getting vaccinated.
Yeah.
It's wild to me.
I'm amazed that the anti-vax movement has even become what it has. Like, I remember years, probably like 10 years ago, when I first started kind of hearing about all that, being like, well, you're in the minority. Like, you're fucking crazy. Like, what? That's insane. I can't believe that it's become, I mean, COVID-19, I think, was like everything they could have hoped for, you know, in that movement to be able to like get their word back out there. I just can't believe.
Right.
And that there are so many people out there.
Social media really pushed things really far, and celebrities started hopping on the bandwagon and opening their big mouths. Jenny McCarthy, you know, and it was just like,
yeah,
I feel like it had a really negative effect. But the reason why we're trying to get to 70% is so that we can reach herd immunity. It is important in order for us to feel truly safe being out maskless around people without, you know, engaging in the same kind of social distancing that we have been for the last year. We can't just trust that everyone around us is vaccinated. So we at least need to make it to that 70% mark. And the CDC shows that 12 states have met the Biden administration's goal to have 70% of adults with at least one dose of the vaccine. California.
Hi.
And Maryland.
I had a feeling.
Recently joined Connecticut, Hawaii, Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Vermont. And at this moment, the CDC shows that 62.8% of the U.S. adult population has received at least one dose, and nearly 41% of the total population is fully vaccinated. So we are on our way. So I understand that these incentives exist for one final push in that direction to try and make it happen. So,
and hey, if that's what some people need,
I guess it's fine, I guess.
I mean, I'm not thrilled about it, but you know what? If that's what it's going to take to get us to herd immunity, to get us back to normal, I'm here for it. So I mean, if businesses are willing to spend their money on doing something like that, I say go for it. So we're not going to have time to really get into this, but I wanted to mention it because I have a feeling that a lot of our listeners have seen this week. And that is the picture of Ellie Kemper.
Oh,
at
those were my notes. I had, hold on.
Oh, I have a ton of notes on it. I don't think we're going to be able to get into it, but I needed to mention it. But she was crowned the Veiled Prophet Queen of Love and Beauty in 1999 at a ball in St. Louis. And Google the Veiled Prophet Queen of Love and Beauty, because we're not going to be able to get into it. But it was started by a former Confederate officer and his brother. They historically excluded Black and Jewish people until 1979. And it's essentially, it was started as a way to keep the power and the money with the rich white people in St. Louis. It was to celebrate the richest and the most established, influential people in St. Louis. And Ellie came from a very wealthy and influential banking family in St. Louis. And she's even said herself that she had a very privileged, nice, warm childhood. So in 1979, they started to allow Black and Jewish people into the group.
Why
again?
Any Black person would want to join this group? Because that only happened after a lot of civil rights protesting in
there
order for that to happen.
There were tons of protests. Yeah. And I think it was just so that that would end. I don't think that there are a lot of Black or Jewish people that would want to spend their time with a group like this. But I think it was just to kind of like end that exclusion. They did make a statement, you know, saying, you know, we are dedicated to ending racism and blah, 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 bullshit, whatever. They've changed their name to try to kind of distance themselves from the whole thing. But Ellie Kemper is now being called the KKK princess.
This was not
affiliated with the KKK.
No,
but
it wasn't. And I will say, if you look up old, I went down a rabbit hole of like looking up old pictures and old drawings.
It's gross.
This is prior to the KKK, right? So this is before the KKK, but the outfits are V similar. Like, it's pointed hoods.
For face, real.
Face covered pointed hoods. It looks very similar. And this is gross to me just because I think that the classism alone outside of the blatant racism is gross. We don't need more things that celebrate rich people. They're rich. Yeah. That's your prize. Congratulations. Yeah,
exactly. Congratulations.
You know? So it's very gross. However, I'm willing to give Ellie Kemper the benefit of the doubt in this situation because she was a teenager. And yeah. I think at that age, this was probably looked at more as something that was, you got to be a pretty princess and go win a pageant. I don't necessarily think that she was thinking about the political, socioeconomical, civil.
But at the same time, if you look at what we talked about earlier this year, I don't know if I talked about it with you, but I know I talked about it with the Date Card podcast when they were guests on our show while you were gone. But if you look at Rachel Kirkconnell from The Bachelor this past season, and she went to an antebellum ball when she was still, I think she was 19 or 20.
Sure. You know, I think that's different. I think it's different because by the time Ellie Kemper was crowned the veiled whatever queen, it wasn't an overtly racist society, right? Like, it has extremely racist underpinnings. If you go to an antebellum party and you dress up in a Southern Belle outfit at a plantation where people were enslaved in 2018, which is a long time away from 1999.
I mean, yeah, that's a good point. I think the other thing that's rubbing me the wrong way is that this has been talked about for days now, and I haven't seen anything about her making a statement. That does bother me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, stating that she works hard to be anti-racist, anything like that. The fact that there's been no statement from her is troubling to me. It makes me think that she's waiting for this to blow over.
I agree with that.
And I don't like that.
I definitely agree with that. Yeah.
I think her privilege might be showing, and she said so herself in 2017 that she's very privileged. Yeah. So. All right. Well, I think that's all we have time for. I'm sure that we could go on and on about any of these topics. I wanted to bring up really quick because I finally finished two pieces. They're taking me forever. I'm going to show Keegan. You guys can't see it, but I am doing Pride
themed
embroidery. So I'm showing Keegan one that is an interpretation of the trans pride flag. So I didn't want to make it too obvious. So I did kind of a cool kind of marbling thing on it. I want to put them up on Etsy during Pride Month. I wanted to have a bunch done. They're taking me way longer than I thought. So I only have two ready, but I want to put them up and have them be available. I want to make more embroidery projects, but particularly for Pride Month, I'd love to get some of these out there. Keep an eye out. And happy start of Pride.
Yeah, happy Pride Month, everybody.
Yeah, we are going to be having lots of excellent Pride content coming your way this month. And we are going to be doing another coming out episode this year. We've already gotten a few emails and stories from you all, and we need more. So if you would like to send us your story, please email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or direct message us on Instagram at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. Please let us know if you would like to remain anonymous, and we will honor that. We won't share your name or your identity. You can also go to our Facebook group page and chat with the other listeners, and go to the business page and give us a like and a review. And if you love us and you want more people to find our show, the best way for you to help us is to go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review and write why you love us. We appreciate it so, so much when you do, and you will be featured on our Instagram for Reviews Day Tuesday. All right, that's all we got for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye.